Reed Wilkins Perfect. In Edmonton. I have shipped it express mail, so hopefully it is still warm
you
by the time it arrives.
You bucked up for the express.
I
like
did.
That.
Reed Wilkins.
Just for your boy, Reed.
Exactly. Reed Wilkins, the host of Oilers Hockey on 630. Chad joins us right now as we focus in on this Oilers team, an Oilers team that, some of their NHLers beat the Flames last night 4-0 here at the Scotiabank Saddledome. Hello, Reed. Happy Monday.
Well, first of all, thanks for sending the Atlas Pizza. I always enjoy when you ship that up from Calgary. I hope it's not on McCrowded Trail. Boy, that's quite a quip by the gentleman reading the traffic. My goodness.
That's actually a new one by him.
That.
You know what? You should. Sometimes we don't get the traffic in time, and Pat does a great fake traffic if you want to give it a shot here, Pat.
Well, he has a lot of he does a lot of alliteration and a lot of rhyming.
Well, give it to him. Come on.
Yeah, so we have Bow Trail. So he'll go, it's a slow go on Bow and an epic fail on Deerfoot Trail. And it's a new one, so now it's, and you're going to want to avoid going southbound on McCrowded Trail. In the 660 News Traffic Center, I'm Trace Ventura. And sometimes the text line gets a kick out of it, Reed. Sometimes we got to do what we got to do.
Well, I certainly got a kick out of it. I'm a big fan of voices and impressions, Pat. I'm very pleased to hear you do that. That's good. But McCrowded Trail, that's the best one I've heard in a while. I know nothing about the streets in Calgary. Like, I know the names. Whenever I go there, I learn it well enough. Is it always crowded on McCrowded Trail?
Yeah.
Is that like an ongoing gag
there's a stretch
where they expand it? Why don't they build an extra lane on each side?
No
That's
room.
What we do here.
No
we
room.
Just spend 2 years tearing up the road to add a lane.
No room, and there's a lot of lights, so you can't really build overpasses. That would be an issue. There's it's you can call them crowded for a reason. It's
like there's an interchange on Crowchild Trail on 10th Avenue and Bow Trail that it was just like the absolute worst engineering fail. That it was so clear it needed to be rebuilt for the last 2 decades. They finally got it done,
and it's better.
It's finally, but it took like 2 decades for them to plan it, get the funding, figure it out, and do it. But it's finally done, and it works much better. So I don't expect that to be alleviated anytime soon.
Well, I bet you now people listening are really mad because we're talking about traffic delays when they're trying to get home.
His other big one is the crush of the rush. Into the crush of the rush. It's every day, 4 o'clock. You know, it's rush hour.
I think your trace is getting better.
It is getting better. I'm really working on it.
Doing really well.
Anyway, thanks for coming on today, Reed. Have yourself a great day.
That was awesome.
Wilkins, tell us about your market. The Oilers have been kind of knocking on the door, on the precipice of breaking through here for a little while. They were that close to being one of the top four teams in the Western Conference for the bubble restart. Last year, they finished number two in the North and get swept by Winnipeg. A few weeks ago, Connor McDavid says the time is now for this team to do something. What's the temperature like amongst Oilers fans in that market?
Well, that's a good question. I think, first of all, people are just excited that the season is starting and there's going to be actual hockey to talk about. We'll see how many people are back in the rink tomorrow. I think there's a lot of optimism that the Oilers are going to be a good team and that they'll be a playoff team, especially in the division where I think it's going to be Vegas and Edmonton in the top two spots. But, I think we're at the point, and look, you know, the players have been asked about, well, are you now just going to be judged by how you do in the playoffs? And Leon Draisaitl said the other day, well, yeah, but I mean, you still have to get there. It still takes 82 games to get there. But I think if you're talking very, very big picture and you look now at Draisaitl and McDavid playing together a long-term contract for Nugent Hopkins, a long-term contract for Nurse, a long-term contract for Hyman coming over to from the Toronto Maple Leafs, you know, some really important players that, when you and I are doing this hit 15 years from now, Pat, we're going to be looking back saying, well, was McDavid and Draisaitl's tenure with the Oilers ultimately a success or a failure based on the number of, you know, hopefully Stanley Cups that they win if they're able to ever, you know, even get one, which is difficult enough on itself. But look, I think that there's the recognition that obviously these two players are incredible. The Oilers should have the best forward core, at least top nine, that they've had in a long time, like maybe even since, you know, well, I was going to say 05-06, but, you know, they obviously had some guys step up in the playoffs that year who didn't play that, who didn't score at that rate anyway in the regular season. So, you know, I think there's, you know, like, we're clearly not talking about an Oilers team that, oh, can they just not finish last? Can they, you know, improve from the 30th to 27th? Can they make it to Christmas and not be like so far out of a playoff spot that it's not even possible? Yeah, I think that a playoff spot should be the expectation. I think maybe even top two in the division should be a hope, if not an expectation, and then you go from there.
Okay, and you mentioned it. You know, some of the additions that have been made or the changes that have been made from the offseason, the addition of Hyman, bringing in Fogle in that swap that saw that saw Ethan Bear go the other way. They bring in Derek Ryan, which I think is a really nice addition, and obviously he had himself a great night in the preseason opener last night. How much better is this group at forward? How much deeper do you see this forward group being this year?
Well, let me answer that this way, Pat. As the series against the Winnipeg Jets went south, and I can't remember if he said it on our post-game show after game three or after game four, when the Oilers actually were eliminated by the Jets. You know, Rob Brown and I, my colleague, got talking about the Oilers, and you know, I said, you know, the problem for the Oilers is they have a first line, and they don't really have a third line, and then they have a couple of fourth lines. And Rob said, you know what? I'm not sure they have a second line. If you look at how it wrapped up for the Oilers last season, they had Draisaitl and McDavid together. When they got into the triple overtime game against the Jets, they shortened the bench to just using three lines. And some of those players are now no longer on the team or are going to play lower in the lineup than they did last year. So the hope for the Oilers now is that they will actually have two competent scoring lines, even if McDavid and Draisaitl play together. Now, I do think they're going to be broken up. But what happened in 1920? Kyler Yamamoto came up from the farm and was excellent, and Draisaitl, Nugent Hopkins, and Yamamoto were a line, and they were actually the Oilers' top line until the pandemic shut down the season in March. And then McDavid was playing with, well, whoever. Who are you going to put him with tonight? Jujhar Khaira? Like who? So now Draisaitl, Nugent Hopkins, and Yamamoto have been a line in camp, and McDavid is playing with Hyman, who I think is a pretty sure bet to be a productive player and exactly the type of player the Oilers need up there, and Jesse Puljujärvi, who did well last season. I mean, he started off maybe a little slow, but he found his footing. He started contributing. He looked more confident. So now you might actually be able to roll lines out where teams aren't just saying like, okay, we got to shut down one line, or we got to hang on for the 25 minutes with David and Draisaitl around the ice together, you know, when you factor in the power plays, and then we just win the other 35 minutes of the game. You know, now maybe if they're split up, you got two competent top six lines that can forecheck and apply pressure and score. And then, you know, that only leaves the opposing team 15 minutes to try to win the game. And, oh, by the way, the Oilers' third line should be better if it is indeed Ryan, Fogle, and Cassian. So that's how it looks up front, and that's why there's more optimism for the forwards. Is that they should be deeper scoring-wise, but they should also be deeper doing other things like checking, getting pucks to the net, getting pucks out, winning faceoffs. Derek Ryan is a big part of that. So that's why there's so much optimism with the forward core.
In conversation with Reed Wilkins, the host of Oilers Hockey on 630. Ched, joining us here on the Sports Drive at 5. Will?
Reed, I know we had a great year last year. The other big talking point, of course, at Edmonton was goaltending, and I'm sure you saw it in Elliot Friedman's first blog of the year before the start of the preseason. He had mentioned that, you know, from the people he's talked to and the information he's gathered, he's not convinced the Oilers are done in goal. What's your read in the crease, and I guess, what do you make of those comments from Elliot? Do you still think there's a chance for Mikko Koskinen to be shipped out of town?
I don't know. I mean, I get asked about Koskinen all the time. I mean, it's one of those things. If all the Oilers fans want to get rid of Mikko Koskinen, what makes you think another team's going to want to take him, especially with that salary? So, you know, you're either retaining salary on Koskinen, which is like, but the Oilers are right up against the cap, or you're trading the contract for possibly another bad contract. So I just don't know how this plays out. Like, if they could upgrade that easily, they would have done it. I mean, they tried to get Markstrom. The Flames got him. Okay. I mean, clearly they sniffed around, you know, some of the guys this summer. They weren't the team that was able to pull the trigger on the trade. I think these are going to be the Oilers' two goalies. I mean, they did have Alex Stalock around, and I'm sure when they claimed him off waivers last year, it was a bit of a Hail Mary. Well, maybe he's going to be able to play and help. Well, we now know that he's pretty much ruled out for the upcoming season. I understand why the Oilers' goaltending gets questioned, because they don't have a sexy name like, you know, Price or, you know, Hellebuck, all the guys, top guys in the league. I get it. And I bring it up too as a question, or less of a sure thing than some of the players up front. But I also, you know, I got into this discussion with somebody the other day, and I said, okay, well, but let me counter this. If you're questioning the Oilers' goaltending, at what point do you actually give Mike Smith credit for being a pretty good goaltender the last two seasons, except for about 5 weeks in November and December of 2019? It's not as if there are signs of his game dropping off. I understand you look at the birth certificate and you see the age, and you say, well, how much longer can he keep playing? And I get it, but until there's actually signs of him being completely over the hill, why are we acting like he's already over the hill? By the standard of save percentage and by the standard of Vezina voting, Mike Smith was the seventh best goaltender in the NHL last season. So why are we convinced that, if a player finished seventh in scoring in the NHL, would you say, well, he's never going to do that again? Mm-hmm. You'd say, oh, no, well, this is exciting. Look how many points he got. So, look, if he craps out, he craps out. But, I mean, he was a pretty good goaltender last season. Like, I have more questions about Koskinen, but again, I just don't know how you move him out. I think you try to play him as seldom as you can, or about once a week, and you know, hope he's at least okay in his starts.
On the back end, everybody wants to ask you, I'm sure, about Duncan Keith and Cody Ceci, but I wanted to ask you about Evan Bouchard. What do you see as his role on this team this year, and how does he shake into things when it comes to the blue line depth?
Well, I'm going to tell you how the Oilers see him. They have incredibly high hopes for Evan Bouchard. Dave Tippett has called him an X factor. He and Ken Holland have brought him up several times as a player who's going to be on the team and is important and should be expected to contribute. And it's kind of unusual for me to hear that, because often with young players, coaches and GMs sort of downplay expectations and what they think the contribution is going to be. And, oh, let's just sort of bring him along. Like, no. They're saying, like, it's like he's ready to go. They've talked about it. Even Draisaitl talked about it a few days ago, saying that Evan Bouchard looks confident, that he sort of, you know, more looks like a man now. He looks like a pro the way he conducts himself. So I think he's going to turn out to be a really important part of the blue line. When Evan Bouchard has the puck on his stick, there are no problems with his game. And you guys probably saw it last night in the preseason game. What he's going to have to develop with, or we'll see how he's developed with it, is stopping the psych doll, retrieving pucks, physical play along the boards. But they seem really confident that he's going to be fine in those areas. And, you know, they've referenced as well, if they're behind in a game, he's going to play more than Cody Ceci. If they need someone to shut down a little more, then maybe Ceci's going to play more. But they are really, really high and really, really confident with Bouchard.
One more, Reed Wilkins, 630 Ched in Edmonton. I do have to ask you, because the traditional Tuesday CFL game tomorrow, Edmonton, Ottawa, obviously there had to be some rescheduling with the postponed Elks game from earlier this year. What's happening with your football team up there? Are they going to be a factor when it comes to the playoffs when it's all said and done?
Okay, well, first, I'm sorry to be Mr. Correcty Pants here, Pat. This is not a rescheduled
game.
This one's
not rescheduled? It was always on a Tuesday?
This game was always on a Tuesday, because Ottawa has this weird sequence where I think next week they might play two games within the same week on the schedule. So they played Wednesday last week, Tuesday this week, and then I think or maybe it's the Thanksgiving weekend. They play Wednesday and Monday or something like that.
So I honestly just thought that, oh, Tuesday. It must be because of the reschedule.
The Red Blacks play the 6th and the 11th. So, yeah.
Huh.
So there it is. Yeah, so coming up. So this was, oddly enough, not a rescheduled game. They got to win. I mean, again, to reference Rob Brown, he always says it's not a must win until a loss ends your season. But if you lose to Ottawa again and you're 2-5, and BC's already sitting there with 4 wins and Saskatchewan has only lost to Winnipeg, and Winnipeg hardly ever loses to anybody, I don't know how you're making the playoffs, even through a crossover at that point if you go down to 2-5. Trevor Harris is not going to start tomorrow, even though he's active. Taylor Cornelius will play at quarterback. Center David Beard is out. He's in COVID protocol. It doesn't appear anybody else has been put into protocol, so at least that's good for the Elks. Cornelius is going to be interesting to watch. He made some really good plays against Winnipeg. He was able to keep plays alive with his legs. He still looked to push the ball down the field, or at least to pass the ball, even when he was scrambling. He only actually ran a couple of times. He made some, ill-advised throws. He looked nervous, especially early in the game. I don't think he got any help by, bad decisions by field goal returners, who instead of conceding a single brought the ball out, and then he's starting inside his own 10 twice, and that led to defensive touchdowns. But, if the Elks play like they did against Winnipeg, they'll beat Ottawa. The problem for them is kind of putting it together in back-to-back games. I mean, you guys saw the Labor Day series. They looked like a completely different game on the Monday than they did on Saturday.
Good stuff, Reader. Enjoy the pizza. Have a good show tonight. And
hope you
we'll
like pepperoni.
We'll talk to you soon.
Oh, my doorbell's ringing. That's probably the pizza. See you guys.